the best time to really buy a property is when these prices are going high, because people who are still selling at these points, they want to get out. Either they have some kind of motivation. That's what you always want to find, right? You want to find that seller that has a motivated reason to get rid of that property.
This is Brandon Turner, and you are listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt? Invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, welcome back to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Cavagione, and today's guest is Brighton Barazia. So Brighton, super excited to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on. Excited to be on.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I know we were talking a little bit off camera, but I want to talk a little bit more about who you are, what you're doing, give the audience a good understanding. Who is Brighton Barazia?
Sure. So I'm Brighton Barazia. I'm a financial coach, also founder of Wealth Marathon, and a licensed mortgage broker out in Canada. So I'm based out in Vancouver. So that's what I've been doing the last couple of years. Prior to that, I worked basically for all the top banks in Canada, doing underwriting. So whether it's auto underwriting, mortgage underwriting, pretty much any kind of underwriting you can think of, I've pretty much touched it at the bank world. So I bring all those knowledge together, and then I help my clients in terms of financial coaching. Or if you're looking to do real estate, I help out with the financing side of it because I'm a licensed mortgage broker. But yeah, my next little project here is being focused on building a Wealth Marathon. So that's what I do most of my time now, and also doing my normal real estate deals that I do on the side as well.
That's awesome. Like, what a great background. I don't think when we were talking off camera, you mentioned that you were a financial coach as well. So that's awesome, because I'm also a financial coach. So maybe we could talk more, share some ideas about that after this. But no, that's awesome.
Absolutely.
So, and it's cool because, like, you're a financial coach, but then you're also a licensed mortgage broker. And I'm a financial coach, but I'm also a licensed real estate agent out here in Hawaii. So it's like we're both on two different sides of the real estate spectrum. So I'm curious, though, like when you're coaching your clients and stuff, do you focus more on the real estate side? Because when I talk to them about once they get themselves to a good place and they're ready to start doing something with their money, I always say real estate should be a very big consideration for building your wealth, depending on what you want to do. Is that kind of the same route that you go, or anything else?
Yeah, I think it's the same too for me, Mike. I think what I usually do is it depends how people get in touch with me first. So some people may just get in touch with me on the coaching side. And then naturally they find out I'm also a licensed mortgage broker, and then real estate always comes up. And as you like, real estate is such a big part of everyone's finance because it makes up a huge percentage of people's net worth. So real estate at some point will come up in any kind of financial discussion you're talking about. But yeah, it depends what channel they first come in contact with me. If I have a client that came to me just from the straight real estate side, we start there, and then we see if they want to broaden their financial picture a little bit more. And then we go into the coaching side. So yeah, it depends how they come into me, and I kind of stay with that lane, and then we broaden the lane depending if they want to go further with that. So I let my clients decide, but it's always nice for them to know that I am licensed. Sometimes they forget that I'm licensed because I usually do have my financial coach first, because to me, I promote that more often, because really I want people to be financially secure. And to me, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be in real estate. So I'm really more about how do you get that life you want, that financial independence journey you're on, and whether that real estate is a part of that or it's a stock investment. I'm really indifferent to that. So I usually start off there. But at the same time, when people start talking, they find out, oh, you're actually licensed. I'm like, yes, I am licensed too. I can do these deals for you if you need that. But now I usually give them comfort, because then they're dealing with someone they know and trust. And then it's just getting a deal done for them around that side.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, so one of the things I wanted to talk to you about specifically, so if you come to that impasse and they're like, okay, I want to invest in real estate, that's where I want to put my money to work for me. I know the real estate market in Canada is very similar to the real estate market in the US, right? We have a lot of similar programs. So the way that people invest, very close to the same, right? So one of the questions I want to ask you, when you have somebody coming up to you and they decide, okay, I want to buy my first property, I want to buy my first home, how do you make that, like, how do you make that purchase the right way?
Great question, Mike, because you know you probably we get that question quite often. I think, okay, so you have to understand I'm sub 35. So the demographic that I deal with is a little bit different than if I have a client who's more seasoned. That's a completely different conversation. So for my demographic, I think what I really try to, and it sounds weird, but I really try to make them, it's really okay to take this process slow. What I try to do with my clients is just tell them to slow down this process, because when you're buying a home and if you've done it for your first time, it's such an emotional roller coaster, because you can be buying a home for all sorts of reasons that you're not emotionally aware of. And then that can go into the finance decision, right? You could be buying a home. For me, I said in my book, when I was buying my first home, I'm an immigrant from Nigeria. I wanted to be that first family, that person in the family that bought the home. My parents had been renting the whole time in Canada. And I didn't like the way people looked at us when we said we were renting. And that was a huge emotional trigger for me to want to buy that home. So in my case, initially, I was using it as a way to show my success and all these other things that had nothing to do with the home, really. So when it comes to people sub 35, I really try to slow down the process, because they're trying to get a home to show themselves that they're successful like the rest of their peers. And what I try to do is just, let's slow this down. This is an investment. There's lots of transaction happen. This is a long-term purchase that could have impact for you for 25 plus years, right? So let's take our time with it and let's first understand what it is that we're buying, where the expenses relate to this, how does this asset work, and how do you do it properly? And then what I usually do with all my clients is I try to tie them and say, this is just a lifestyle purchase. I'm of the belief that if you buy a principal residence, by that I mean you're going to live in there with your family. The best way to be successful at that is really to ignore all the noise about your assets going to go up and blah, 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 blah. Because the mindset to buying an investment property and a principal residence to raise your family are completely different, right? One is about numbers and how do I get the best return? And the other one is really about creating this experience that you're going to have, these memories that you want to build up in that home. And that means sometimes it's not about the investment return that you care about, but it's also about those memories that are just as equally as important as the return. So that's what I try to do with all my clients, is slow down the process and let them know that it's a lifestyle purchase. And what we want to do is figure out what's the right mortgage, what's the right home that can get us the lifestyle that we love living. Because if we can do that, we won't care if the properties are going up and down, because we can actually live the lifestyle we want to live on a day-to-day basis. And that's really all that matters. So that's what I try to do, is just slow down the process for them, let them know it's a lifestyle purchase. And then we try to understand, educate them about all the expenses that come with homeownership. And then usually my clients appreciate that, because they realize they don't have to rush into this. This isn't a thing I have to go buy a home right now. And they take the time to figure out what is a lifestyle and then find the right mortgage at a right home that can fit that lifestyle for them.
Yeah. So Brighton, I absolutely love your answer to that, because, you know, it shows how genuine you are, right? And how caring you are with your clients, that you tell them, hey, slow down. Let's take a deep breath and really take a step back and take a look at what we're getting ourselves into here, especially if you're a first time home buyer. You've never owned a home before. Maybe your parents have, maybe they haven't, but you don't have that experience. You might know other people that own homes, but you've never owned one yourself. So you've never gone through that process. And to say that emotions are involved is an understatement, right? Because yeah, you might have that underlying emotional connection that's happening when you're making this purchase, but there is so much more than that. Like you said, you might not even realize, because when you're going to spend that much money on something, trust me, the emotions are going to get triggered. You're going to feel that.
Oh yeah.
And you might not realize just how tied this transaction is to your emotions. I think a lot of people don't realize, and it took me a long time to realize too, that every purchase I've ever, whether it was something small, big, an investment, anything, there was always some type of emotion tied to that. And anytime I spent my money, and it was about changing that mindset of how I felt about my money, how I treated my money, and just changing my relationship with my money, is when I realized, okay, it's okay to let go of certain things. But that took time.
Yeah.
That wasn't just an overnight thing and I'm ready to go. Oh yeah, I've completely detached myself emotionally from all of this, right? It's impossible. I even say that from my primary residence that I live in out here in Hawaii too. I say, oh yeah, I've detached myself emotionally. I could sell this tomorrow and I'd be fine. That's not really the case. My wife and my kids are here, that we built a life here. To just pack up and go like that, that's a huge emotional decision. Right. Although it's one that I'm trying to convince my wife to make so we can just pack everything up and go buy a sailboat and sail around the world. But I digress. But seriously,
good luck with
that's
that,
one
buddy.
Of the things. Yeah, but that's one of those things where you don't realize that those little things in the back of your head that might be getting triggered when you start making those decisions. And then you start talking yourself out of things because you're like, did I do the right thing? Did I make the right decision? Is this the right path for me and my family to follow? So the fact that you target that when you're working with clients is huge, right? Because it shows how much you care, like I said before, right? Yeah. So I know that they're getting a good experience when they come to you, that they feel more comfortable when they make that decision. So as they're going through the process, they've slowed down and they're like, okay, we found the property we want. We want to make this happen. I'm not sure what the, because I haven't followed it, like what the interest rates and stuff look like in Canada right now. But I know in the US, they're rising, right?
Yes.
But they're, I mean, they're what they were at, I think, when I bought my first home. Because when I bought my first property, I think I got like a 6.4% interest rate or something on it.
Well,
my current property, I mean, my primary residence right now, I have a 2.25, which is beautiful. People right now are like, okay, they're scared because of the interest rates, right? Now, if you're working with somebody and that becomes a factor, like they're starting to back off because they're like, I don't know, because the interest rates, like, how does that impact somebody that wants to purchase a home?
Yeah. And I think, Mike, you probably know this. It depends the segment. If you're a first-time home buyer, it's definitely impacting them way more because obviously their ability to capacity is reduced significantly. Like in Canada, even though rates are rising and prices have slowed down, the average home price is still far exceeding most people's first-time home buyers' income level, right? So even if rates are high and yes, people are not like crazy bidding on houses and all that, like during COVID time, it's still really expensive to get a home or to get into a home to start off with. And the honest truth is, for most young buyers, just so you know, most they're having to get help from family and friends. That's just the reality of it. Because to save up the amount of money that you need for the minimum down payment, 5% of $1 million is a lot of money to save up, particularly when you're just maybe starting your career. Even if you're just eating noodles, it's still a lot of money to save up. So typically what I find is friends and families have to get involved, and that's just the reality of it. And I try to coach them and say, some people are really, they really want to try to do on their own. And I say, you know what? It's okay if you need to get friends and family involved in this transaction, because the reality is maybe it's just not working out. So that's one way to do it. The other way, people are being creative. Maybe I would say younger people are being smart and they pay more attention to cash flow. So maybe they do have a property. It's just not a principal rent. It's a rental property and they rent. I have a friend who lives in Vancouver, but they own a property in another part of Vancouver, which is Lower Mainland. And actually, because they bought early on, that property now is generating enough cash flow to offset the rental costs in Vancouver, because they would like to live in Vancouver and that's the life that they want to live. And that's ways that I think younger people are doing it. So you have to be a little more creative. You have to look at how the landscape is and then be creative in terms of thinking about what is it that I'm trying to achieve long term, and then find different ways to go about it. But if you're just laser focused on just the way that maybe your parents did it, but the situation and environment today is completely different from where your parents are going, you're going to find it very frustrating dealing with any kind of realtor or mortgage broker, because you're never going to be able to get in. So you have to be creative to get to the same destination that you're trying to get to. It doesn't mean that you can't achieve that, but it does mean you may take a different vehicle to get to that spot. And that's what I like to do with people who are at that point where they're trying to get in, but they're like, oh, you can't. And Mike, you know this, the other thing too, that's important for clients in this market, I try to tell them, is the best time to really buy a property is when these prices are going high, because people who are still selling at these points, they want to get out. Either they have some kind of motivation. That's what you always want to find, right? You want to find that seller that has a motivated reason to get rid of that property, because it means you're going to be able to negotiate with them, right? So in the rising interest rate environment, you have individuals who they're selling late now because they saw their friends and family sell earlier on. They're still stuck to that price point, but then they have to And what will be left eventually with people who are actually have a need to leave that property. So it can be a great time to buy now if you can get into it, because you're probably going to be buying from people who have an extra motivation to get rid of that property, as opposed to when rates are really low, everyone's selling and buying. Now you're committing people like, oh, just in the silent, everyone can afford it, everyone can qualify, no problem. So it's a great time. I'm working with a client right now, and that's what we're doing. I told them, just relax. We'll take our time. Maybe Christmas time will come and we'll see some really people who are really desperate. They need to get out their property. And that might be a good time for you to go acquire property, because how's their home off for sale in December? They got to leave, right? No one wants to sell in December, right? So it's one of those things, finding different ways to get to the same solution and just being patient with it, right?
We'll be back after a quick break. Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, Brighton, that's a great point. And it makes me think about some of the conversations I've had with my clients as a real estate agent out here as well. Is yes, the home prices are at a point where they've peaked, right? And now with the rise in interest rates, we're starting to see like smaller price drops, nothing crazy out here, but they're either staying flat or there's minor price drops, right? And with the higher interest rates, it does make it a little more difficult, right? Because you cannot purchase as much home as you could a year ago when the interest rates were much lower. But what I'm telling the clients that I work with is like, hey, like right now, your competition is gone. Like where a couple months ago, you'd be bidding on this house and crossing your fingers and hoping that you put the right amount on there over asking price to get it, where now you can probably go in and offer asking price or maybe even a little under asking price and get this property that you want. And then guess what? When interest rates resolve and they start going back down, go refinance it 6 months to a year from now and lower your mortgage payment. But guess what? You won because you got that property that you wanted and you didn't have to compete for it. So right now, it's a good time to be a buyer. It is a really good time because you have that opportunity now. You have a little more leverage than you did before. Previously, when it was just a seller's market, it was like throwing a rock and hoping that it hit something. And you're like, please. Exactly. I had a client that we put in 9 offers. And when they were going to put in their 10th one, they said, you know what? We can't do this anymore. It's too emotionally draining. And I'm talking about they were offering 50, 60, 70,000 over asking and still not getting it. Stuff like that is painful. But now is that time where you don't have to necessarily worry about that. And you can focus on finding that property that you really want, the one that hits the market, and you're like, okay, this is it. And you don't really have that competition anymore. I think that's huge. I want to circle back to something else that you mentioned about your friends in Vancouver and how they bought that one property outside of Vancouver. Yeah. They got it at a price point where now it cash flows and offsets their rent for them to live in Vancouver. And it makes me think about a conversation I had with someone a couple months ago, and actually the podcast episode just aired not too long ago, but we were talking about how he in particular, and I've heard other people say this too, own where you rent, right? So rent out the properties that you own, but then live and then rent where you live. So what are your thoughts on that? If you were to just buy like investment properties in different areas, and then you want to rent in a specific location because that's where you want to be, and it would be cheaper to rent there than buy. An example being Vancouver, I'm pretty sure it's very expensive to purchase real estate there, but renting is doable, right? So what are your thoughts on that? What do you think about your friends that did that? Is that something that you would recommend to other people? Hey, use this to offset and live where you want to live and enjoy?
Yeah, I think, that's a conversation that happens more because I think, again, demographic, depending where you're at, right? Like, in Vancouver, it's stupidly expensive. And I said $1 million, that's not the price point for Vancouver, right? That's like a box you get for $1 million. So if you're talking like a detached home, like most of us, like that's way out in the picture. You're not. So I think the whole idea for me in that concept, where it makes sense, and depends on the client. You have to first agree with me on the basis of why I would make that recommendation, which is I don't view a principal resident as an investment property. Like I don't view that as an asset because I'm using cash flow as my definition of it, right? Because if I have a cash flow property, someone's paying me cash flow to offset the cost of that property. And if I'm lucky and I've paid all the expenses and I have a little bit of cash flow left over, which then I can do whatever I want with it. But in a principal resident, it's the opposite, right? You're not the one receiving the cash flow. The lender receives the cash flow, which is why I said earlier, you need to think of it as a lifestyle purchase. So if it's a lifestyle you're after, then it makes sense for you to think about, okay, where do I want to live? If you can find somewhere, say in Vancouver, where you're like, okay, I don't really want to buy a principal resident because I'm after a particular lifestyle and the area I want to live, doesn't make sense for me to buy a principal resident because then I'm really not buying an investment property. but I can buy an investment property, which then I can participate in the growth of real estate over time. And over time, I can actually have that cash flow to help me live the lifestyle and the place that I want to live in. And that's very, so you have to be very disciplined with that, right? It's not a thing that you just pick up and say, I'm going to do overnight. And that's why most of the clients that I would bring up that to, they already think in that manner. I just help educate and say, okay, your thought process makes sense. I wouldn't be necessarily suggesting that just to anyone, because that strategy really requires someone to be disciplined. A friend I mentioned has owned that property for 10. This is not just a one thing, oh, 10 years. And that person is individually strong in the lifestyle they want to live, right? Not all clients like that. They may say it's a good thing. It makes sense. We talk about emotional. They may agree with me. They may be nodding with me. But when it comes time to implementing the strategy, they waver on it, right? Maybe now they move back into the property, right? Because they're going, why would I be paying rent to someone else and all these different things, right? And the reason why that makes sense and why that conversation is happening more often, particularly under 35 years, is because at this price point, it starts to become even more obvious that it is not a cash flow investment. Like they're giving up so much of their income daily to put a roof over their head. And they start to question, what is the quality of that lifestyle I'm having? What is the point of giving so much of my income on a day-to-day basis to someone else when I'm going to be doing this for the next 25 years? Like, I don't want to live that lifestyle. And when they realize that, I think that's where the renting thing starts to play a bigger role. And because in Vancouver, I don't know how it is in Hawaii, but in Vancouver, just the fundamentals of supply for us, like there's just not enough homes, which means these prices are going to stay elevated for as long as you can. And which means that if you've gone in early, like I was fortunate to get in early, you're going to benefit for the short to long term. But if you're trying to start the game right now, it's really difficult. And people ask me all the times, would I do buy my own home again? I said, no, I wouldn't, because it's way too much cash flow excess, right? The home I'm in right now, I wouldn't buy at the price point it's currently for the market. What I would do though, is what I said earlier, which is I probably would buy it, but it'd probably be an investment property, which means the whole house would be rented. My family and I would probably live in somewhere else. And then my hope would be in 10 years, we paid it down enough that it makes sense for my lifestyle to move into that home, or we just keep it going forever. And then that could be our retirement plan down the road. So again, it's about thinking differently based on the environment you're in and not just doing the same thing that you were accustomed to when the environment and situation around you has completely changed, but you're still doing the same habits and wondering like, why can't I buy a home? Because it's completely out of your reach and you have to think about it differently, right? So that's what I mean by that. But I agree with you, Mike. I think those conversations I'm hearing are way more than I used to. But I think it's helping in my market because the prices are so high. But if you take another market like Calgary, which is just a neighboring province to me, more people still own there because homeownership is still way affordable over there. So it depends what market you're in. But if you're in a high-priced market, I think that strategy makes more sense. But if you're in Alberta, which is next door to British Columbia, it's still really affordable to buy a home. You can buy a nice, reasonable home for like $300,000 in Alberta. So like it's still the rent versus ownership. Ownership makes more sense in that market than say Vancouver, where it's completely skewed the other way, where it's just way too expensive, too much cash flow outflow going out every month, that it doesn't make sense necessarily to own, even if there may be a long-term benefit. Just day to day, people can't sustain that lifestyle for like 10, 15, 25 years because it sucks so much income out of their life.
Hey everyone, Mike with Average Joe Finances. The Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference, aka RubeCon, is on for 2023. It'll be May 4th through the 6th in Phoenix, Arizona at the Sheraton downtown. I'll be speaking again this year and I want to see you there. This year I'm doing two speaking events, one about growing your investor network through podcasting and the other is about investing while in the military. We have some great speakers lined up, so you don't want to miss this conference. Visit averagejoefinances.com/RubeCon, RewBCon, or the link in the notes below and use promo code Mike for discounted tickets. See you there.
What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about WealthTender. If you are a finance content creator, whether that's a blog, a podcast, you're a financial advisor or a financial coach, I highly recommend you check out WealthTender. WealthTender is building a database of all the top finance blogs, podcasts, and the financial advisors and financial coaches that they have on there are vetted and top-notch. So we actually had the pleasure of hosting Brian Thorpe, the CEO and founder of WealthTender, on Average Joe Finance's podcast episode 25. Go check out that episode, listen to his story, and listen to him talk about the database that he's building. It's really phenomenal stuff. So if you're interested in checking out the directory, or if you're a finance content creator and you're interested in joining up with the directory, go to the link below in the show notes, or check out www.averagejoefinances.com/wealthtender. Let's get back to today's episode.
Yeah, Brighton, you hit a lot of key things there. And one of the things I want to talk about is the inventory of the market right now. When you were describing how the prices there are staying steady because there is a low inventory, right, of properties that are available. And it's the same thing out here in Hawaii. And that's actually always been a problem in Hawaii, is the actual inventory. It's always been very tough. And then, of course, with the pandemic, it made it even crazier. And the thing is like that, and I think that's what people don't realize. They're like, why aren't the prices like dropping more? Because you'll see like a property that's at 1,100,000 and then they'll drop it 50,000. Oh, how come they haven't dropped it more? 50,000 is a lot for the reason why they dropped it. The values of these properties are not going down because there's no other properties really being built. We have some that are being built, but not much. There's only so much land that we have out here before you can't build anything anymore anyway. But the same thing though, with some of the shortages and the supply chain and things like that, it's caused a lot of these home developers to not be able to finish projects on time, or increase costs that they have to deal with. So now the properties that they're building that you thought you were getting at a certain price point now have to go up in price. So there's a lot of factors that come into that. But the inventory piece, I think, is huge. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. And it's a thing that it needs to be in the back of people's heads when they start looking to go purchase a property, just understanding how the market itself works. And that's why it's important that you have a really good team, right? You have a really good real estate agent. Yes. That knows the market you're working in. You have a really good lender that understands what your capabilities are, right? To make sure that you're pre-approved for the loan that you need to have, and to make sure you're not going to over-leverage yourself, because that's one of those things you don't want to see people doing, is where they take out a loan too big and they think, okay, I got this, I'm pre-approved, I'm going to go buy this home. And then they buy the home and they're like, cool, I could afford this mortgage. And they're like, oh, wait, taxes. Oh, wait, homeowner's insurance. Yeah. Oh, we have an assessment that came up for whatever, or, oh, wait, here's a homeowner's association fee I got to pay that I didn't know about. So it's very important to have all this information up front before you make that huge emotional decision. Yeah, that's huge, man. So actually, speaking of that, because I just outlined a couple of mistakes, but what are some common mistakes that you've seen people make when buying a home?
Yeah. Oh, man. Maybe we'll have to do another podcast here, Mike, for just covering this. We can share with each other and never seen. I think the overarching thing is just, we're not really clear about what we want initially. Like when you start out this journey, we're just not clear. Even it took me a while. And I said in my book, the reason I was successful at my initial first purchase was because I worked at the bank. So I would meet these clients that own property or investment property. And I would literally just work my conversation to buying a home into it. And they kept giving me advice. And what I found was people who did the home successfully, they kept stressing the mortgage debt. Like they just kept stressing it over and over to me. The investors, my clients that were investors, they kept stressing cash flow, right? Just focus on cash flow. So when I went my first purchase, like I said, I was an emotional wreck. I didn't know that I was using my home as a way to show that I was successful. Like I really didn't think of that. I was just like, oh, I've got a good career. The next step is to buy a home. That's what I was thinking myself. But realistically, what I was doing is, I was using my home as this guise for success. I wanted people to just see the home and then automatically attach that I'm successful because I have this home. So it took me a while to know that. And I think like you and I will know the typical thing for first-time home buyers, like they don't like the things you point out. They don't know there's other expenses like property tax, like insurance, like water, utility. They will typically come from a place maybe they're paying rent. So they will go rent to mortgage and they think that's it. And I go, no. Yeah, rent to mortgage is not really an apples to apples comparison. What you have to do is if you're paying a certain amount of rent, you have to figure out what the total home ownership cost is to own a home and then compare that. So the rent payment would be comparing to the mortgage, the property taxes, the insurance the person has to pay, and all the other expenses that are required for that individual to pay to continue to live in that home. And then you factor that into your actual rent payment because that'll give you a proper assessment on it. So I think the biggest thing is, like you said, most of us are emotionally driven by something else. We think we just want to buy the home, but really there's something else happening. We're not willing to be honest about that until someone points it out to us, or we take a deep dive into ourselves. And then the second thing that's common, I want to tell you, just first-time home buyers, they just don't know all the expenses associated with it. They're really not aware of a house breakdown, and that's your cost. The bank doesn't come to fix that. Like a new gutter needs to be replaced. That's your cost. No one is coming to fix that. Or the maintenance that just involves keeping a home going. People are not really aware of that. Or if they are, they really don't appreciate how cost that can be, especially if you get into a home where you just got in, right? You don't have a lot of free cash flow. So you get into the home, you're excited. And then 2 months later, something's wrong with the gutter. And that's $1,200 you have to pay. And you're like, I don't have $1,200. So guess where it goes? Credit card. And then the cycle kind of starts. And then I think the final thing for my existing homeowners that have home, the biggest thing they do is they constantly refinance their home. And I am not a fan of constant refinance, particularly if it's a principal resident. I view refinancing like when you own a business and you have retained earnings at the end. Like, you shouldn't just get your retained earnings to go spend on vacation, whatever. That retained earnings is in there to try to help the business be more successful, right? So when you take the money out of the company, you should be on things that can actually improve the business. And to me, I use that analogy with my clients and say, your equity you build up is like your retained earning. Why would you take that back out to go give back to the lender to charge you a higher interest rate? You just worked all this time paying down the mortgage to bring to a certain level, and now you're going to give it back to the lender to make more money off you. And the worst part with it, my existing clients, is most of that refinancing is done for credit card consolidation. So now they're taking good debt that they had and they're bringing in to pay off bad debt. And they continue to do that because they have a cash flow deficit, right? And that's something that I really try to tell people. You shouldn't just refinance. And I think, Mike, we have all these new products, right? Equity line of credit. It's so easy to tap into that equity nowadays that I try to tell my clients, if you have a home and you've done a really good job and you're paying that down, that is your payday. That is your retained earning. If you're going to take that equity out, do it on things that are going to produce more cash for you. Try not to just do it to go get a new vehicle. Like, I know you need a new vehicle, but that's a depreciating asset. Now you've just taken good debt and made even worse debt, right? That you've paid down on. So those are big things. I know I went in circle, but if you're starting out, I would say most people, they're buying a home for other reasons other than just buying a home, but they tell themselves they keep buying a home for that. No, there's an emotional thing why you're buying a home. So figure that out. And then the second thing is most people are just not aware with the full cost of a home. They don't appreciate that. Hey, this home takes a lot of energy and effort to maintain. And then for once they get the home and they've been working on it for 5-10 years, they start to frequently refinance every time their property goes up, and they don't understand that they're taking their retained earnings and giving it right back to the bank to charge them more interest on it. So those are the three things I would say that most people misstep in terms of the homeownership.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack there. And including what I had mentioned earlier, you added so much onto that too. Like when you think about the different expenses that can come up with homeownership, you have a plumbing issue, you have an electrical issue, something happens and you have to replace your roof. That stuff's not cheap. And it's not something that is really on the top of your mind when you're signing that document to own that home. You're like, great, I own this property. This is how much it's going to cost me every month and this and that or whatever. But then if you add up all those other expenses that are going to pop up and add that to your monthly payment, now what do you think about it? So those are things that you really need to consider. And then, yeah, for the people going out and refinance, I guess maybe doing like a cash out refinance and things like that, not realizing how much more you're adding or paying back to the bank by doing that. I do like other products, like you had mentioned, lines of credit, right? So home equity line of credit. I actually took one out of my principal residence to buy more real estate, and I bought more cash flowing assets. And I take the cash flow from those assets and I pay it back into the HELOC. So I think stuff like that is great. So knowing what those products are and how to properly utilize them to purchase more cash flowing assets can really help you in the long run start really accelerating and building your wealth. So I think that's huge. Brighton, absolutely awesome, man. I want to transition this now into something that I call the final round, where I'm going to ask you the same four questions that I ask everybody that comes on this show. So if you're ready to go, we'll get that party started.
Well, let's get into it.
All right, let's do it. All right, Brighton, the first question I'm going to ask you, and these are all like hard-hitting questions and they all tie into each other, but what's the biggest mistake you've ever made with your finances?
Yeah, biggest mistake is when I got my first real job, went for a cell phone company, I decided to buy a brand new vehicle as opposed to listening to my dad to keep my used vehicle and just keep maintaining it. Again, I was trying to impress my dad. So I bought the new vehicle, $350 a month. And it was a balloon payment, which meant that at the end of 5 years, the interest shot from 3% to 11%. So yeah, I have that vehicle still to remind me what poor financial decisions look like. So that would be my biggest mistake, that I still drive that vehicle. I'm not kidding. I still have it. It's a Kia Forte 2010. And that's what I drive to remind myself that we all make mistakes, but that's my biggest financial mistake early on.
Wow. Appreciate that transparency. And I just got to ask, because you said your dad told you to keep your used car and then you bought the new car to impress your dad. So what did he say when you did that? What are you doing, knucklehead?
Yeah, he was just like that. He was fighting with me the whole day, like saying, why are you buying this vehicle? You don't need it. But like that, what that was very good is like when he said his piece, he let you experience the failure because he always thought you learned more. And he was right. He went with me to a dealership and he said, it's a nice car. He was very supportive, but he made his point is like, you don't need to do this. This is a wasteful purchase that you're doing right now. But I was young. I thought, you know, I deserved a new car. I didn't want to be driving an old beat up car anymore. No, Got a new car. But no, I learned now what he meant is just, hey, I get it now. It's a depreciation asset. I'm spending this money. I should put that into savings. And don't get me started, Mike, on the compounding effect on that payment that I'm thinking about every day. I don't think about it. Really, I don't think about it.
All right. I'm not going to try to give you any flashbacks or bring that up anymore. All right. Hey, Brighton, so what is something that you've learned that you wish you knew when you first started?
Focus on cash flow generation as opposed to acquiring assets. That I wish someone had really hammered that into my head, because what I'm doing now in my life and everything I look to purchase, you mentioned investment profit, it's just cash flow. The more cash flow you can get, right, and keep your expenses low, the better quality of life you can have. But early on, I was focused on asset accumulation. Like I wanted assets. I didn't care if they had cash flow or not. I just want people like, oh, you got a new car. Oh, you got a house. But I wasn't paying attention to cash flow. So now I understand how significant the cash flow is. And I wish I'd learned that early on, because some of the investment decisions I would have done would have been different. I would have been where I am probably sooner if I understood the cash flow principle.
That is a fantastic answer. And again, thank you again for that transparency, because cash flow, as they say, cash is king, right? Cash flow is king.
Yeah.
If you can build up your cash flow to the point where you have enough where it covers your expenses, you have now become financially independent. And I think that's huge. As a matter of fact, this past weekend, I played the cash flow game for kids with my kids. And they absolutely loved it. And they were asking so many questions about, hey, why is it that now I have to make these extra payments because I got this credit card payment that now I have this new monthly debt that I have to pay? And my youngest, she was asking so many questions about this stuff. And I was like, oh, this is really good. It's getting juices flowing and getting them thinking about it.
Awesome.
And then realized like there was some of the stuff that they bought. They would buy securities and they're like, oh, you know, that's only getting me a small amount per month. But then when I bought this business or when I bought this piece of real estate, it was making me more cash flow than the investment, the securities that I bought. So she's okay. She's like, maybe that's what I want to focus on. If I land on a asset card and it comes up with another securities, if it's not enough money, I don't want it. I'm going to push for that business, or I'm going to push for that real estate. And I was like, oh, okay, that's good. So I was like, yeah, this game's out pretty good, man. Okay,
that's awesome.
I don't want to take this over. So I'm going to go into the next question.
And it's all good, man.
Do you have any tips or tricks that you would recommend to someone that is just getting started out today?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think it goes back to my early answer, which is just focus on the lifestyle, really try to create a sustainable lifestyle. What I mean is like, you can have a lifestyle that's just like you can live on consistently as minimal as possible. And then what I do is make sure you have cherries on tops here and there, but you don't want cherries your whole life. You need a sustainable lifestyle, but still find ways if you like to travel, make sure maybe your budget is a little more skewed more than other people towards traveling, but make sure everything else is consistent. So for me now is just try to create a sustainable lifestyle, because if you can do that, you can keep increasing your cash flow, but your expenses won't necessarily increase. And that's the trick in this finance game is, how do I increase my income, but keep my expenses at bare minimum, right? That still functions for my day-to-day life, my family's life. So I think that's the tip I would say is, if you can do that, you're probably going to be successful long-term.
All right. I love that. I love that. All right. And the final question, Brighton, do you have, and besides your own, do you have a favorite business, investing, or real estate related book, or podcast, or both?
Average Joe's pretty good too. No, I would say
like that one.
A book. I'm a huge fan of Ray Dalio. So Principle is one I read recently. It's a really good book. I just like how he like a life and wealth together. I think if you try to disconnect those two things, even if you have financial success, you're gonna be miserable. So I like how he mashes wealth and life in general. So that's a good one. One of the earliest books that really I was like, that's exactly it, was Tony Robbins, the first book he wrote, the big, giant, like 800-page one. Off the top of my head, I can't remember. I think it's Master the Game or something like that it's called. But that book was really great. I'm going to get one more investment book that I like, which is the original Jack Bogle's book on passive investing. Can't remember the exact title, but it's the little small book. I think it's called Little Book on Investing. But that was just like, to me, when I read that, it was just, I was at the bank. And I remember we always had this debate between active versus passive. And when I read his book, I just was like, yeah, I knew it didn't make sense for this to be happening. So that book's always in my shelf. And it's one of my favorite books to give first-time investors to just say, hey, at the end of the day, cost matters a great deal. All things being equal, focus on the cost. For podcasts, other than that, Freakonomics is one I enjoy thoroughly. I think he does a really good job just exploring all kinds of finance and stuff like that. So those would be my tips, things that I'm interested in, I read and listen to.
All right. Awesome. I appreciate that. I appreciate your recommendations there. And I wrote down a couple of them there, especially principles. Got to add that to my list. But yeah, that's awesome, man. Book. And I appreciate just everything about this episode, the transparency and just how open you were with everything. But I do have one more question for you because that's it for the final round. But the last question here is the most important question of all, because the people that have been listening to this episode are like, I really like what Brighton's talking about. I really want to know more about him and what he's doing. And I know we didn't really talk about it during the interview, but I know you have a website that you can share with us. So if you could, please share with us, what is your website? Do you have any social medias that anybody can follow you on and hear more information about you or from you?
Yeah, sure. So the best way to get in contact would be go to our website, which is www.wealthmarathon.com. That's the best place to start because you get all the details from there. I'm active on LinkedIn. We got lots of exciting stuff happening next year with the company. So go on the website. You can always sign up for newsletter, keep updated on all the information that's going to be coming through. If you want to read a little bit more about me or some of my concepts, you can always pick up my book, Master Your Mortgage. It's on Amazon, What the Banks Won't Tell You About Buying the Right Home. So you can read a little bit of that to find a little bit more about me. But again, go to the website because that's where you get all the details.
All right. Awesome. Hey, man, I really appreciate that. I'll make it simple for everybody and we will have those links in the show notes so you can copy and paste or click away. Just don't do it while you're driving. Brighton, this has been absolutely fantastic, man. This was a really good interview and I really appreciate your energy. I appreciate your transparency, like I said before, and just all the information that you shared with us, man. This was really good stuff.
Hey, man, I'm appreciative you had me on, Mike. It was awesome. And again, hopefully that was valuable to all the audience that's listening here.
Yeah, thanks so much. And speaking of my listeners, I want to thank you all so much for joining me and our special guest, Brighton Barzia, on the Average Joe Finances podcast. Make sure you go leave us a 5-star review and tell us what you liked about today's episode with Brighton. Aloha from Hawaii and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for making it to the end of this episode. Greatly appreciate you being here with me today on the Average Joe Finances podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make this the episode that you go leave us a 5-star rating or subscribe to our YouTube channel. The Average Joe Finances podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Have an outstanding day.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.